This is Your Life, episode 17. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about seven keys to writing a killer blog post. This is based on a workshop I gave last week in Memphis, Tennessee at the Shelby International Conference. And after I finished my workshop, my wife Gail asked if I'd ever written on this topic. And I said, no, I don't think I have, not even in the book platform. So I thought I would share it with you as a podcast. And I want to define what constitutes a killer blog post and then give you the seven keys to writing one. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Dynamic Communicators International, producers of the SCORE, Launch, and Platform conferences. These unique events are designed for professional speakers and those who simply want to communicate more professionally. You can find out more at dynamiccommunicators.com. So let's talk about the seven keys to writing a killer blog post. In episode 13, I shared how my blog traffic has grown from a few hundred unique visitors a month when I first started blogging in 2004 to about 300,000 unique visitors a month now. And I'm not going to repeat that here except to say, man, I have learned a ton along the way. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've had some successes, but I've documented all of that. And that's what's in my book platform if you want to read it. But one of the things I love about blogging is monitoring the analytics or the site metrics. And I can tell exactly how popular a blog post is based on those metrics, based on things that are objective and observable. I know whether it resonated with my audience or it just fell on deaf ears. So when I talk about writing a killer blog post, I mean something very specific. I'm not talking about whether or not you liked your blog post, or whether or not your family and friends liked your blog post. No, I'm talking about something very different. My definition of a killer blog post is one that performs well as measured by three specific metrics. Number one, traffic. Did you get a lot of traffic or not? And this is a relative thing, but I mean relative to your normal traffic. Did you see a spike in traffic? That's evidence of a killer blog post because it's evidence of more people coming, obviously, and reading your blog post. And by the way, when we're talking about traffic, I'm not talking about, quote, hits. Sometimes you hear novices or newbies talk about how many hits they got on their website or on their blog. That's not a metric that matters. That simply means the calls from a browser back to a server. And so for one blog post, you may have multiple hits. Whether you're loading a bunch of images, like on a typical page for me, I might have 15 different images between all the ads and the image that goes with a particular blog post. So there's a lot of hits there, but they don't mean anything. The only thing that matters there from my viewpoint is unique visitors or maybe secondarily page views, the number of page views that a particular blog post got, because that's indicative of the number of people that read that particular blog post. Second metric that I look at is engagement. This is important to me because it really is a measure of whether or not people are interacting with the blog post, whether or not they found it stimulating enough to leave a comment. And I know this isn't important for every blogger, but it's important for me. And so I look at the comments. I find that the blog posts that get a lot of engagement, get a lot of people wanting to talk about it on my blog, are the ones that I define as killer. Third metric I look at is the shares. And specifically for my blog, I'm looking at the number of times that post was retweeted and the number of times that it was shared on Facebook. And you could look at other metrics as well, like LinkedIn and pins on Pinterest and sharing on Google Plus or the other social media networks. But for me, I'm principally looking at Twitter and at Facebook. So if the content is really good, people want to share it. They want to tell their followers about it. And that to me is a measure of a killer blog post. If I have a higher than usual number of shares, that's a good indication that I've written something that could be in the killer blog post category. But the secret, and I said this when I spoke at the Shelby International Conference, the secret to writing a killer blog post can really be reduced to this sentence. So if you want to, you know, snooze for the rest of the podcast or go on to something else, fine. You know, I'd love for you to stay with me, but this is the secret right here. If you want to write killer blog posts, just write stuff people want to read and share. It's that simple. Just write stuff that people want to read and want to share with their friends. That's the secret to writing a good or a killer blog post. So here's my premise for this episode. You can unlock the potential of your blog post with these seven keys. Seven keys. Number one, focus on your readers. This is really where I hit an inflection point when I was blogging in about 2008, when my traffic went from about 700 readers a year to about 20,000. I said 700 readers a year. I meant 700 readers a month to about 20,000 readers a month was principally because I shifted the focus. I stopped talking about me so much and my company so much and started talking about my readers. Most people are tuned into WIIFM. You know what that is? What's in it for me? WIIFM. They want to know what the value is to them. They don't care about you. They don't care about your world, your company, your organization, your cause, as much as they care about how that impacts them. So you kind of have to reframe your orientation in your writing. It's not about you. It's about them. The only exception to this might be if you're a celebrity and then people want to know what you had for lunch. They want to know who you're with. They want to know a lot of details related to your personal life. But for the rest of it, rest of us, we have to make it about our readers. How do you do this? Well, start with your readers' hopes, their fears, frustrations, obstacles, failings. Just get inside their head a little bit. How does it feel to be them? And then I would suggest that you write to one person, not a group. The kind of writing that addresses everybody in the second person plural, you know, like you or you, my readers, or hey, friends, you're not talking to a group. You're not talking to a group when you're podcasting. You're not talking to a group when you're writing a blog post. You're talking to one person who is listening to you individually or who is reading your content individually. That's a very intimate and sacred relationship, and you need to treat it as such and speak to these people as individuals, like you were sitting across the table having a conversation with them. Here's some examples of ways that I focused on my readers in times past and wrote what were, by the metrics, killer blog posts. These are some that are continuing to get enormous traffic today. One was fix for wireless connection problems on the MacBook Pro. Yes, that was a blog post that I wrote because of some frustration that I had back when I had a MacBook Pro and I couldn't get it to reliably connect to my network inside of my house. And so I researched that, I tracked it down, and then I wrote a blog post that basically told how I fixed the problem in real English for non-technical people. And if you look up that problem, wireless connection problems on the MacBook or the MacBook Pro, that's gonna be the number one ranked blog post on Google. So I just was able to write it from my reader's perspective, taking it though from an experience that I had. Another one, how to set up Google Calendar on your iPhone. Another frustration I had. I thought that would be a straightforward process. As it turns out, not so much. And lots of people have had that problem. So I took what was a problem for me, I turned it on its head and focused on my readers and told them exactly how to solve that problem for themselves. Another blog post that was in the killer category for me was creating your personal life plan. Life planning is something I really believe in. I even wrote an ebook on it, and I wrote a blog post from my reader's perspective in terms of how this could benefit them and how to go through the process, and how, by the way, to get the ebook for free, which you can still do on my blog at michaelhyatt.com/lifeplan. And you can download that little ebook for free, and it's been a huge hit. Over 50,000 people have downloaded it so far. Another blog post that I wrote, again, focusing on my readers, The Beginner's Guide to Twitter. So often as bloggers, we take for granted the stuff we know. We have the curse of familiarity, and we can't get back, or we don't get back to what it's like to be a beginner. So I thought I would write the kind of blog post that I could give to my mom or give to my dad or somebody that's not technical and they could use that and begin to be productive with Twitter and really enjoy the experience. Another blog post I wrote called Advice to First-Time Authors. This was, again, something where I focused on the reader. Authors who come to my website, don't know where to start, want to get published. What are their hopes, fears, concerns, obstacles, failings, all the rest? So I tried to get inside their head, and I wrote that blog post, and it became very popular. So the first key is to focus on your readers. Second key, though, is to write a powerful headline. This is so important because we live in such an incredibly noisy world where all kinds of information is coming to people all day long, and they've got to have a way to filter it out. And most of us filter that out by looking at the headlines. And we look at the headlines in everything, whether it's a newspaper or a radio show or something else. We're trying to look at the big headline and see if we might be interested in going further. This is also true in blog world when it comes to RSS feeds. People subscribe to these blog feeds like I do to RSS feeds, and I'm just scanning the headlines because I'm subscribed to about 200 blogs. And in the process, I want to see what interests me, and I look at the blog headlines to see if it's worth reading further. So a couple ways that you can write better headlines and write more powerful headlines. First of all, educate yourself. And I would recommend a couple of resources. One, copyblogger.com is a terrific resource for more reasons than just headlines. It's great on just writing copy and writing better blog posts. And I subscribe to that in my RSS feed. But there's a particular article there called How to Write Magnetic Headlines. It's actually an index to several articles on the Copy Blogger site, all about writing more powerful, more compelling headlines. But it's called, again, How to Write Magnetic Headlines, and I've got a link in the show notes for you. Another person that I've read faithfully is a guy by the name of David Garfinkel. And he wrote a book called Advertising Headlines That Make You Rich. And, you know, this is not a quick rich scheme. It's not, you know, some kind of cheesy book, although it sounds maybe a little bit like it. But it's a fantastic book that I refer to almost daily because he takes, I don't know, I think the top 20 headlines of all time in terms of the ability to generate actual response in the direct mail world. And he deconstructs those and talks about why they worked. And he gives you several examples in each case how you can modify those headlines and use them for your own products or services, or in my case, with blog posts. That's essentially what I'm trying to sell to the public, is the content that's coming off of my blog. So that, again, is in the show notes. There's a link to it on Amazon. It's not a cheap book. I think it's about $40, but it's worth every penny. Again, I look at it almost every single day as I'm trying to brainstorm ideas for headlines. Another resource from David Garfinkel and Brian McLeod's course, Fast Effective Copy. And I've been through that course twice. It's an audio course with a great workbook that has all these copyright or these copy templates that you can use and adapt to your own writing. Again, that's not cheap, but I do have a link. It is an affiliate link on my blog, but check it out. See if that might be of helpful to or helpful to you as well. So educate yourself and also just practice. This is something that, like anything else, for me at least, is if I focus on it and work at it, I think I've gotten better over time. But I don't try to do these kinds of headlines that are cute, that are a little too clever, that only mean something to me but don't communicate with my audience. So again, key number one, as I mentioned earlier, was to focus on your readers, and then to write key number two, a powerful headline. Here's a couple of examples, and I've measured these really by traffic and engagement, but headline examples that have worked well for me, and these are in the last month. I wrote a blog post called Why You Aren't Dead Yet, generated 575 comments, and I think that was one of those that just created curiosity, made people interested or intrigued in what that article was about. Another headline, 7 ways to get super focused when you need it. That's a need that everybody has. And I tried to identify in the headline exactly what the need was. And by the way, when you enumerate or use a number in a headline, that's also a secret that can be very helpful, because everybody, when they read that, naturally want to know, okay, what are those 7 ways? So use numbers. That garnered 795 comments. Another one, how to say no when you feel pressured to say yes. And this was a case where I was just writing to a need that I was feeling. I was feeling pressured to say yes to a lot of invitations, a lot of opportunities, and I needed to be able to say no to those. So I wrote out of my own need, but turned it towards my readers and tried to capture the need in the headline. That got 474 comments. Another blog post that I wrote is the fine line between working hard and letting go. And I think everybody feels that tension, and I tried to capture that tension in the headline. 447 comments. A guest post on my blog that did extremely well. This was written by Jeff Goins. And if you're not familiar with Jeff, he writes at goinswriter.com. There's a link in the show notes. But he wrote a post called How to Live Your Dream When You're Scared to Death. Have you been there? I have. How to Live Your Dream When You're Scared to Death. 824 comments. Then I wrote another post basically from observing a couple at church who they were bad-mouthing one another or speaking ill of one another. And I thought, wow, that is not healthy. It's not helpful. It's not conducive to building a great marriage. And so I wrote a post called Why Speaking Well of Your Spouse Is So Important. That got 1,179 comments. So again, it's worth studying headlines and noticing what works. A third key to writing a killer blog post is to include a relevant photo. Well, why? Because again, people are scanning, and some people are by nature more visually oriented. Images capture their attention, sometimes even when headlines won't. But your audience, your readers, have been conditioned by other media, magazines, newspapers, other visual media that work with images. And so I would encourage you to use a relevant photo. First of all, you've got to find a source for photos. I use istockphoto.com, and that is an affiliate link in the show notes, but it also will give you a discount off your first batch of photos that you buy. And to be honest, I can't remember exactly what it is. I can't remember if it's 15% or 20%, maybe even 25%, but check out the link, and it does give you some kind of discount. If you don't want to pay money for your photos, and I certainly understand that, although I did from the beginning because I wanted the best photos I could find and I just didn't have all day to search for them. But if you've got a little time or more time than money, go to flickr.com/Creative Commons. And Creative Commons is a kind of license where you have the ability to use those photos with attribution without running afoul of the person who owns the copyright in that photo. So flickr.com/Creative Commons, and there's some terrific, terrific photos there if you've got the time to do a little browsing. And obviously you could use your own photos, but I would allow some time to browse. I allow about 10 to 15 minutes. It sounds like a lot, but to try to find the right photo to pair with my blog posts. And then don't use cliched photos. You know these kind of photos. I mean, it's the kind of photo, you know, sort of the cliched photo of people shaking hands when you're trying to communicate about partnership or relationship. It's just been overused. And then I would say also use multiracial or multigenerational photos. We live in a global environment. Not everyone looks like you, sounds like you, is in your circle of friends. So try to reach out beyond that. I've had to work at this, and believe me, I've heard from my readers when I get too monochromatic and just do photos that have people in it that look like me. And so I try to be a little bit more diverse, and I really believe in diversity. And this is an opportunity for you to practice diversity even in your own posting. The fourth key, tell a relevant story. This is so helpful if you practice it regularly. I don't know of many things that will pull readers into a blog post like a great story. People connect with stories. It's also one of the things that really makes you unique. And I have people from time to time ask me, they say, look, I don't really have anything unique to write about. I don't know what to write about because the content's not that unique. The principles I'm trying to set forth are not that unique. Somebody else has written on them. Somebody else has talked about them. Well, here's the thing I would say to that, and that is these same concepts expressed through your unique experience, your unique personality, that's what makes them unique. So tell stories. Even if it's a principle that's been told 1,000 times, it's never been told through your experience or through your unique personality. So use that. Well, how can you do this? I suggest you mine your experience. There's times when I just kind of kick back and I think through my childhood. I think through my teen years, I think through my business experience, And I try to find some story, searching my own mental database, trying to find some story that's relevant to the point that I want to get across. Sometimes I just start with a great story, some story that I remember from my childhood. Like recently, I talked about my dad's admonition to me in building model airplanes to not force things that shouldn't be forced. And I used that as a whole principle for a blog post. In fact, it was that title I gave you earlier, between the fine line between working hard and letting go. So stories can be really helpful. I would also suggest you be vulnerable. This really works with today's audience. And I don't suggest that you use that as a way of manipulating your audience, but as a way of connecting with them. Be honest. Start with your failures. People connect with that a lot more than they're going to connect with your successes. And then distill a principle that you want to expound upon in the blog post. A couple of examples recently where I told a relevant story was I told the story of writing an angry email, you know, taking a lot of time to compose it and then sending it and not hearing anything from the recipient, reading it a few weeks later, being embarrassed by the content because I totally overreacted, and then not hearing from this person. And then the next time I saw them, they graciously embraced me. And, you know, it was just a taste of grace. And I realized that what futility there was in writing these long, angry emails and how little they really accomplished. I've talked about investing in a bogus tax shelter and going through a multi-year audit with the IRS and paying tens of thousands of dollars in penalties and just, you know, making stupid financial decisions. I've made plenty of them. I've talked about going through a business failure in the early 90s. I've talked about having fights with my wife and what I learned from that. So tell a relevant story and be vulnerable when you do so. That's really the fourth key to writing a killer blog post. The fifth key is make your post scannable. Again, people are very busy. They're being conditioned by other media, and they've got to get to the relevance of your post quickly if you're going to have a chance of pulling them into the content and actually reading all the way to the end. There's a couple ways to do this. Use subheads to break up the text. This makes it less daunting. It makes it less dense. It makes it easier for your readers to get their minds around. Something I do, and sometimes I think I overdo it, but it seems to work pretty well, is to use lists. Whether bullets or numbers, it makes the content scannable. It breaks it up and it serves it up in bite-sized pieces, but don't overdo it. You don't want to look like your blog post to look like they're merely an outline. They do need to be in a narrative format. They need to be, just a normal blog post. They can't just be an outline, or at least I don't see how that could really work. So make your post scannable. Sixth key, keep your posts brief. And you need to use simple words, short sentences, and short paragraphs. This makes your content more accessible. It makes it read fast. Don't use a complex word or a big vocabulary word when you can use a simple one. Don't use a complex sentence when you can use a simple one. Don't use a long paragraph when you can use a short one. That doesn't serve the interests of your reader. And with rare exception, it just doesn't work in making your post readable. I would suggest you shoot for about 500 words per post. And I did get one call on my voicemail line where somebody said, yeah, but what about the exceptions? What about the Social Media Examiner, for example? Or what about Tim Ferriss's blog? He typically writes, 1,000, 2,000 words. Yes, there are exceptions. And if you're trying to write, like a signature piece that will be get great results on SEO and will live forever, sometimes you want to write an all-inclusive piece like that. And again, there are exceptions, there are reasons for it. But I'm just talking about your day-to-day blog posting. And if you're going to do it daily, I would suggest that it be about 500 words a post. Also, read good writers. Read good writing. And this will influence you as you pick up their cadence and their voice and their phrasing and so forth. And then just practice. Seth Godin is one of the best examples of someone I know that writes brief posts. He kind of has the philosophy, I think, that he wants to make it long enough to cover the subject, but not so long that it gets boring. So you want to have it short enough, is another way to say it, short enough to keep it interesting, long enough to cover the subject. Seventh key is end with a question. Why? Because as a blogger, you really have the privilege of leading important conversations, but it has to be a conversation. It's not a monologue. It's a dialogue. It's a conversation, and you want engagement. This is the biggest thing that I did to increase the comment count on my blogs, which, by the way, also has the benefit, if you display it prominently, of giving you social authority. People assume that if you're getting a lot of comments, that your content must be interesting or it must be important. And then I would say also, don't say everything that can be said about a topic. Leave room for your readers to engage about the topic and to talk about it further, but end with an open-ended question. Just a couple of recent examples from blog posts that I've written. I said one question was, what experiences have you had with either sending or receiving angry email messages? Man, there were some incredible stories that people left in the comment sections of that particular blog post. Another question, what could you do today to be a better friend to your spouse? That was another question that got a lot of response. Or another question, what do you wish you knew then that you know now? Oh my gosh, some great life lessons in that particular blog post. So again, open-ended questions that invite conversation, invite dialogue. And I feel like I've barely scratched the surface, but I've already gone 26 minutes, and I hope this will help you to begin to write killer blog posts, at least more effective blog posts. And I want to go now to a few listener questions. So the first one comes from Bill Kerr.
Hi, Michael. This is Wild Bill Kerr from wildbillkerr.com and wildbillpodcast.com. I love your podcast. It got me inspired to start podcasting again. So thanks for that. And I wanted to ask you, I start a lot of draft blog posts on my website. I get a lot of great ideas, but I can't seem to follow through on a lot of them. Do you have a hard time finishing things you start? And what tips do you have to help us finish? Thanks.
Well, that's a great question, and I definitely start more things than I finish, and that's okay. I start more books than I finish reading, and that's okay, and I've talked about before. In fact, I think Tim Ferriss has a chapter in his book, The 4-Hour Workweek, called The Art of Non-Finishing, and I do practice that, even in my blog posts, but obviously you've got to finish some, and the best advice I can give is give yourself a deadline. Make a commitment to how long you're going to post or how often you're going to post. And do it no matter what. There have been many nights that I've been up till midnight trying to finish a blog post because I was committed that I was going to post. And so you just got to stay with it, stay focused on the deadline, and I think that will help you. I also try to outline it first so I know where the blog is going to go and how it's going to end and what the concept that I'm trying to communicate. And I basically learned that from the SCORE conference, which you can find out more information at scoreconference.com, and that's SCORE with two R's. There'll be a link in the show notes. But that helped me not only with public speaking, but also with writing blog posts and finishing them. The next question comes from Dana Pittman.
Hello, my name is Dana Pittman, and I'm calling from Houston, Texas. You can find me online at danapittman.com. Michael, my question for you today is, how do you create a blog post that is adequate and gives enough information but doesn't give too much information if you intend to repurpose the content or you reuse the content for, let's say, a book? I look forward to your feedback. Thank you.
Sometimes I know it's tempting as a blogger to try to withhold information, don't give your best stuff or withhold some of what you could give in the blog post because you intend to use it later. I think, honestly, that's a mistake. I think that whatever you've been given now is a stewardship, and you're not going to get more until you give what you have away. So I don't ever withhold anything. I always give it my best effort. And I find that by the time I'm going to repurpose it, whether I'm going to use it in a podcast or I'm going to use it in a book later, that I've got so many additional insights, such an additional perspective on it, that it just naturally goes to the next level. But I would withhold nothing in the process of delivering a blog post. Obviously, that doesn't mean you have to say everything you know about the topic, but I just wouldn't withhold anything thinking that you're going to use it later. I don't personally think that's good stewardship, and I don't think you'll get more information or better information if you do that. I think give it away and then trust that even better stuff will show up when you need it. The next question comes from John Stallings.
Hi, Michael. This is John Stallings from Stockbridge, Georgia. I blog at johnstallings.com, and that's John with no H. I'd really have your thoughts on how you create a killer blog and still be true to your message and not come across as though you're being manipulative to your audience. I'd really love to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
Great question, John. And I would say that I'm definitely not an advocate of trying to manipulate your audience. It doesn't work. It doesn't work in a world of social media where people expect authenticity and really demand it. I think you're never more effective or more compelling than when you're absolutely honest, transparent, and authentic. So I don't think these things are mutually exclusive. I think they're both and. In fact, I think the secret to writing really compelling blog posts that shift people's thinking, that influence them, that call them to action is just that, being authentic. Warts and all, tell the truth, tell your story, and let that be the hook that really drives the story forward and makes your post have the impact that you expect. The next question comes from Mary DeMuth.
Hi, Michael. It's Mary DeMuth. I blog at marydemuth.com. And my question is, has there ever been a post that you've written that you thought was weird or dorky or no one would like it, and it ended up being a raging success? And so I guess that the follow-up to that is, what kinds of blogs have you written that have really surprised you? And which ones have you written that you thought would be awesome and then no one responded? So I've had that experience too. So I thought I would ask. Thanks.
It's a great question. I'm not sure I can give you some specific answers, but let me just state a general principle, and that is that there's no necessary correlation between how you feel about a post and how it actually performs. I've had that exact same experience where I wrote what I thought was going to be a killer blog post, and then it went nowhere. Nobody engaged around it. Nobody seemed to be interested in it. It just didn't generate that much traffic or that much shareability. So, and I've had the converse experience too, where I wrote something hastily, maybe at the 11th hour, and I just thought, ugh, this is not going to be that great, and put it out there, and it goes crazy. So a couple of them that I've thought of in the past, I was watching MTV one night a couple of years ago and was just appalled at the MTV Awards of what a lack of modesty there was. So I turned the TV off and actually wrote a blog post called Whatever Happened to Modesty. It went crazy. It was basically a throwaway. I wrote it in about 30 minutes. It's been one of my most popular blog posts ever. Another one I wrote was, I think it was called 5 Reasons Why You Should Take a Nap Every Day. Maybe it was 7 reasons. I can't remember now. But at any rate, that also went crazy. And I don't know exactly what caused it, but those were surprises to me. It was just something that I was writing about because I had an interest at the time, but it went crazy. And I can't think of any good examples of posts that I thought would be terrific that weren't, but I'm sure there were a lot. So anyway, I hope that is helpful to you. Next question comes from Melissa Taylor.
Hi, Michael. This is Melissa Taylor from Denver, Colorado. I'm in your platform launch group, and my website is imaginationsoup.net. In platform, you mentioned telling personal stories, but I don't, because I want to have my topic and keyword in the first paragraph. And I know you start with personal stories in your blog. How do I reconcile this? Do I just not worry about the keywords in SEO, or do I tell personal stories later? Help.
One simple way to do this, Melissa, is just to have an introductory paragraph that summarizes the principle or gives people an idea of what it is you're going to cover in the personal story, and then segue to the personal story from that. You can get your keywords loaded into that first paragraph. It's not that big a deal. And to be honest, I don't try to be that calculating about the SEO, at least in the content itself. And maybe I would have more traffic if I did. But I mostly just want to pull people into that particular blog post. And I think that to me is more important than the SEO. I want to capture the people and engage the people who are already on my blog, not skew the content for the people that haven't visited yet. And maybe that's just where I am in terms of my blogging. But I want to connect with the people that are already there, because I know if I can do that, they're more likely to share the content with other people, and they will be natural recruiters for new traffic. So that's kind of the way I look at it. Your mileage may differ. Another question comes from Ron Cantor.
Hi, Michael. This is Ron Cantor in Tel Aviv, Israel. I blog at roncantor.com. And I read in platform, you were suggesting that it would be good to write a controversial blog. Well, I did that, and I went by all the steps I read in platform, keeping it short, 500 to 600 words, having very clear points, and it was controversial. And I noticed that I only got about 20% of my normal readership. It didn't seem to take with my readers. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that. What do you mean by writing a controversial blog? Thanks. I can't wait to hear.
Ron, I was kind of racking my brain trying to figure out where I said that in platform. And so I did a keyword search on the book. It's kind of a phenomenon that happens, but you write a book and you don't remember everything you said in that book, or it gets confused with what you said on your blog. But I did mention that in chapter 28, just kind of in passing. It was the only place I could find it, where I said the posts that generate the most engagement for me are those that are controversial, comma, transparent, especially about failure, and or open-ended. So I don't know that I necessarily would advocate just being controversial for controversial's sake, or controversy's sake. I do think you ought to be clear, you ought to be distinct, and if that ends up being controversial, so be it. But I don't know where I've ever written something controversial that I knew before I wrote it that it was going to be controversial, or maybe I should say it this way. I didn't intend to be controversial just for the sake of being controversial. Having said that, I know what my values are. I don't compromise those. And if that ends up being controversial, fine. So hopefully that's helpful. The next question comes from Shannon Milholland.
Hi, Michael. This is Shannon Milholland of shannonmilholland.com. My question is about reach. Do you simply measure your reach by the numbers, or are there other tools you use to assess the impact of your blog posts and determine whether or not it truly was killer? Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Well, there are hardcore SEO people that will tell you that the only thing that matters is conversion. And I suppose that if you're trying to sell stuff, that's absolutely true. And certainly when I look at my landing pages, that's what I'm looking at, is what are the conversions. But when I'm looking at blog posts, there's a sense in which the conversion to me is whether or not the person was compelled or motivated enough to comment or to engage with the content, and particularly to share with it. So I go back to the three metrics that I shared at the beginning of this episode, which are traffic or page views in particular, or unique visitors. And then I look at the engagement in the form of comments, and then the shares in the form of retweets and Facebook shares or Facebook likes. So those to me are the measure of whether something is killer relative to my normal metrics on my typical blog post. Is this, outside the normal or outside the range? And if it is, then I would regard it as a killer blog post. The next question comes from Sharon Swing.
This is Sharon Swing from onelifemaps.com. What have you found, Michael, is the best way to get your customers to talk about what has wowed them about your product or service in a way that allows you to easily share it on your blog or your website?
I think it depends on the kind of product you're selling. But for example, in my speaking engagements, I always ask the event sponsors after the event if they'll give me an endorsement. So I just straight up ask them. And that was difficult initially, but it's gotten easier with time. And now it's just a part of our normal process, our standard operating procedure in terms of the workflow of booking speaking events and following up. So I just ask. If you're looking at a book that you've published, like I've got Amazon reviews on my book platform, and I just ask some of the initial readers if they would bother writing a review. And the one thing I don't do is I don't try to dictate to them how the review should be. In fact, I bought a car recently, and they said it would really be helpful if you would give us all 10s on a scale of 1 to 10. And there's just so much at stake here. And I mean, they were practically begging for it. I don't really like that. If they just asked that I gave an honest assessment because they wanted to learn from it, I would be much more inclined to do it. So I would just ask people for an honest assessment. This is one of the reasons, by the way, why I love comments, because people will tell you whether or not your content resonated with them, whether or not it wowed them, or not. And so that's why I like soliciting that kind of feedback. The next and last question comes from Travis Domert.
Hi, Michael. This is Travis Domert calling from I Run, You Run in Atlanta. I've been writing a single blog post each week for about a year now, and I'm thinking about increasing the frequency. So my question is about the logistics of finding frequent inspiration and being able to regularly get into a flow of producing great content. I'm curious, how do you come up with a steady stream of fresh ideas, and how do you establish a rhythm to your writing? I enjoy the blog and a podcast, and I really appreciate your suggestions. Thanks a lot.
Travis, for me, it really comes down to two things, and I've mentioned this in other contexts, but it's reading a lot. So I read a lot of books, I read a lot of blog posts, I keep up with the news, and I do that because I want to have a steady influx of content. This is the raw material out of which blog posts are forged. You've got to have new and fresh content. I find that oftentimes when I'm reading a book, and I read most books through audio as I'm out running, or out on a commute or driving around town. And what I find is that that stimulates some thought that I want to expand upon on a blog post. So that's kind of my secret weapon, if you will. But a second way that I do it is by attending conferences. I attend probably an unnatural number of conferences every year. And I do that both as a speaker, but also as an attendee, because again, I need the stimulation. And it's not just the content that's presented from the stage or from the platform. It's also the content or the interaction I get with the other attendees who are there as we're talking about what we're learning, as we're talking about just, you know, what's important to us and what we're doing now, but just meeting with other interesting people. So I think you've got to have the proper stimulation, the proper input, if you're going to have a steady flow of blog posts, and you've got to be strategic about that. So that's all the time we have for questions today, but I want to turn the tables and leave you with a question. I want to ask, what tips do you have for writing a killer blog post? And to comment on this episode and to answer that question, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/017, like episode 17, michaelhyatt.com/017. Couple of announcements here as we conclude. My book, Platform Get Noticed in a Noisy World, is continuing to do well. As you may know, it hit all the major bestseller lists, including the New York Times, the USA Today, and the Wall Street Journal. And I'm still doing lots and lots of media. But if you haven't read it yet, I hope you'll buy a copy. This is a book for authors, speakers, comedians, small business owners, realtors, mortgage brokers, corporate brand managers, basically anyone with something to say or to sell. It really is a step-by-step guide for getting noticed. Second announcement is I'm going to be speaking at A Day About Books with John Maxwell this coming Saturday, June the 23rd in West Palm Beach, Florida. I cannot wait. I'm going to be speaking on the topic of platform. And if you're an author or you've ever thought about becoming an author, this conference is for you. It's an unprecedented opportunity to learn from someone, John Maxwell, who has written 70-plus books. He sold more than 20 million copies. He's one of Amazon's 25 best-selling authors of all time, and he'll be sharing his unique process about writing. And I've got a link in the show notes. It's not too late to sign up, but you're going to have to act quickly if you're going to get there for the event this weekend. And if you're interested in having me come speak for your event, please check out michaelhyatt.com/speaking. I still have some openings for this fall, but they're filling up quickly. In the next episode of my podcast, I'm going to be talking about how to maximize your vacation time by going on a digital detox and reconnecting to what matters most. This is the time for vacations. I'm about to take a vacation about 2 weeks from now. And if you've got a question about this topic, please go to michaelhyatt.com/podcast question and leave me a voicemail, and I'll do my very best to get your question in my next episode. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd be very grateful if you would take the time to rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. If you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com. Go to the show notes for this episode and scroll down to the comment section. I would love to hear from you. So until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. Your life, are you-